come to order. Senator Pogerbiller.
Good morning, Mr. President.
Good morning.
I'd like to impose a call of the Senate.
Senate's under call. Pogerbiller.
I move that further proceedings under the roll call be dispensed with and Sergeant-at-Arms be instructed to bring in the absent members.
On the motion, all those in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed. Motion prevails. Today's chaplain is Reverend Richard Buller from the Valley Community Presbyterian Church in Golden Valley. Mr. Buller is also the house chaplain.
In reverent humility, O God, we turn our hearts and our minds to you. We are eternally grateful for the privilege of living in our state of Minnesota. May we continue to be worthy guardians of our heritage of freedom and democracy. We pray this afternoon that your spirit of justice and compassion will guide our senators as they wrestle with the challenges that face our state. O God, grant them clear, prophetic vision, forthrightness, steadfast strength, and courage to legislate. Let no impatience and expediency cloud their judgment and diminish the trust bestowed upon them by the citizens they represent. This, O God, is our prayer. Amen.
Thank you, Richard. Very nice.
Secretary will take the roll.
Anderson, Bach, Berglund, Betzold, Bonhoff, Carlson, Chaudhry, Clark, Cohen, Dahl, Day, Dibble, Dill, Dahl, Erickson, Ropes, Fischbach, Foley, Fredrickson, Gerlach, Gimsey, Han, Higgins, Ingebrigtsen, Johnson, Jungbauer, Koch, Coring, Kubley, Langseth, Larson, Latz, Limmer, Laurie, Lynch, Marty, Metzen, Michelle, Moi, Murphy, Olsen, Olson G., Olson M., Ortman, Pappas, Pariseau, Pogemiller, Pretner, Solon, Rest, Roebling, Rosen, Rummel, Saltzman, Saxhog, Scheid, Senjum, Sharon, Sieben, Skoy, Skogan, Sparks, Stumpf, Tomasoni, Torres Ray, Vanderveer, Vickerman, Wergen, and Wieger.
Quorum is present. Next order of business is messages from the House.
Mr. President, I have the honor to announce the adoption by the House of the following Senate concurrent resolution. Herewith returned, Senate concurrent resolution number 10 relating to adjournment for more than 3 days. Signed, Albin A. Mathewitz, Chief Clerk of the House.
Latz. I will read the message from the House, and Senator Pogemiller, maybe you could lay it on the table after we read the message.
Mr. President, I have the honor to announce that the House refuses to concur in the Senate amendments to House File Number 2553, a bill for an act relating to state government creating a catastrophe survivor compensation fund, appropriating money. The House respectfully requests that a conference committee of 5 members be appointed thereon. Representatives Winkler, Kahn, Solberg, Simon, and De La Forest have been appointed as such committee on the part of the House. House File Number 2553 is herewith transmitted to the Senate with the request that the Senate appoint a like committee. Signed, Albin A. Mathewitz, Chief Clerk of the House.
Senator Pogemiller.
Mr. President, I'd move to lay the message from the House regarding House File 2553 on the table.
On the motion, all those in favor signify by saying aye. Motion prevails.
The next message is on House File 1351. Mr. President, I have, pursuant to Joint Rule 3.02A, the Conference Committee on House File 1351 was discharged after adjournment on May 21st, 2007, and the bill was laid on the table. House File 1351, a bill for an act relating to transportation, modifying or adding provisions related to geotechnical investigations before eminent domain proceedings, the highway sign franchise program, streets and highways, etc. House File 1351 has been taken from the table, and new conferees have been appointed. Representatives Hornstein, Nelson, Mador, Hortman, and Ruth have been reappointed as such committee on the part of the House. House File 1351 is herewith transmitted to the Senate with the request that the Senate appoint a like committee. Signed, Elbin A. Mathewitz, Chief Clerk of the House.
Senator Murphy.
Thank you, Mr. President. I move the Senate accede to the request of the House for a conference committee on House File 1351 and that a conference committee of five members be appointed by the Subcommittee on Conference Committees on the part of the Senate to act with a like conference committee appointed on the part of the House.
On the motion. All those in favor, signify by saying aye. Opposed, motion prevails.
Mr. President?
Senator Pogemiller.
Senator Latz is in the room now, so I would move to lift.
Let's do that under motion.
Under motions, yeah. Okay. Lift from, yeah.
Mr. President, I have the honor to announce passage by the House of the following House files herewith transmitted. House File 117. 2898, 3411, 2582, and 3515, signed Elbin A. Mathewitz, Chief Clerk of the House.
Oh, we're going to wait on Lats for a while. Okay, we're going to take your Senator Lats under motion. So the next order of business will be first reading of House bills. They are printed on today's agenda. Without objection, first reading of House bills. Remaining under motions and resolutions are a couple of resolutions. Without objection, they will be referred to the Rules Committee.
Mr. President.
Senator Pogemiller.
Under motions, I would move to take the House message regarding House File number 2553 off the table and then yield to Senator Latz.
Do his motion.
On the motion.
On the motion to take it from the table. All those in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed. Motion prevails. Senator Latz.
Mr. President, I move that the Senate accede to the request of the House for a conference committee on House File 2553 and that a conference committee of five members be appointed by the Subcommittee on Conference Committees on the part of the Senate to act with a like conference committee appointed on the part of the House.
On the motion, all those in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed. Motion prevails. Without objection, we'll take introduction of Senate bills. Oh, excuse me, Senator, does he have another motion? Remaining under motion, Senator.
Do you read it?
Senator Murphy, do you have a motion to read?
Thank you, Mr. President. I would move that Senate File 3223, number 96, on general orders be stricken and re-referred to the Committee on Finance.
Okay, this is your bill.
Yes, Mr. President, okay. It is.
On the motion by Senator Murphy, all those in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed. Motion prevails. Remaining on motions, without objection, we'll take up introduction and first reading of Senate bills. There are two changes. Senate File 3779 will be sent to state and local government operations. And Senate File 3784 will be sent to the state and local government operations and oversight committee. Without objection, first reading of Senate bills. We're going to go into the committee of the Senator Pogemiller.
Mr. President, I'd move that under motions we take up the general orders calendar.
On the motion, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, motion prevails. Senator Pogemiller.
I move the Senate do now resolve itself into Committee of the Whole for the purposes of taking up the general orders calendar.
On the motion, all those in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed, motion prevails.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to designate number 58 on general orders, Senate file 2822, and yield to Senator Clark.
The bill under discussion on general orders will be number 58, Senate file 2822, Senator Clark.
Mr. Chair, I move that when this committee do arise, Senate file 2822 be recommended to pass.
Discussion on the bill, Senator Clark.
Mr. Chair, members, I just want to give you a quick go-through of what has become known as the Good Faith Bill. This bill is here because we do have an issue in our state that there are times when somebody who is insured is having difficulty in actually reclaiming what they've paid for. The goal here is to try to make sure that if you've purchased insurance and that you have something bad happen, that you're actually able to get what you have paid for under your insurance policy. I'm going to give you a couple quick examples of where we might see something like this, because this is really about people, although it's become perhaps at times to be talked about other things. If you're in a car wreck and there's an uninsured motorist that's hit you and you have suffered injuries, right now, if you are trying to get back to the underlying ability to collect from your insurer, you may not be able to do that. So we want to make sure that somebody could have their actual medical bills covered. You can kind of think about what we talked about with Senator Latz's bill recently. Recently, there was hail damage. There was a hailstorm in central Minnesota. There was a number of places in Sartell or St. Joseph where people were able to get remedies from their insurance companies, but occasionally there was somebody who was not able to. We're trying to get to the heart of that. So if you think about it, this is one of those few places in our law that we don't have some deterrence in case there might be someone out there who is not acting in good faith, who is acting, as it sometimes is called, in bad faith. And that's kind of an odd thing. If we run a stoplight, we get a ticket. If we park our car inappropriately, we get a fine. Those things at least theoretically deter us from that. So I'm going to go through what this bill does. I want you to know that it is significantly changed from last year as introduced. The bill introduced from last year, from a consumer standpoint, could be considered to be a much stronger bill. But what we've been trying to do since near the end of last session is to try to work with a variety of people to come up with something that both puts some deterrence and some protection, makes that consumer whole, that they do get what they pay for, but at the same time takes into account some of the issues related with industry. You may recall the speaker had actually had a working group near the end of session. We came close to an agreement, but not all the way. We started there at the beginning of this year, and as we've moved through the process, we've tried to incorporate, where possible, things that would make sense and make it clear. So first off, this bill is limited to first-party claims. The insured would have to have a burden. It's a pretty high test. They're going to have the burden of showing that the insurer was not acting in good faith. The two-part test that is in the bill in front of you is what is often known as the Anderson standard that is in Wisconsin. So first off, the insured would have to go ahead and prove that there was an absence of a reasonable basis for denying the benefits. So for example, in the hail example, the insurer said there was no hail damage. That would be a reasonable basis for denying the claim. And second, after they've shown that, they would still have to show that the insurer either knew of or recklessly disregarded the lack of a reasonable basis for denying the benefits. So, where's the teeth? Well, under the remedies in this bill, the insured would be only entitled to economic damages. It is purely, we've exempted out non-economic damages. The award of attorney's fees would be discretionary. That was something that was important to many in the industry. So they may not get, there may not be any attorney's fees, even if someone wins. There would also be subject to specific factors. In addition, we've exempted a number of entities. The good faith practices requirement and remedies would not apply to workers' compensation, health policies, township mutual or farmers mutual insurance companies, or their reinsurers attempting to get at the issue that has been brought before us, or life insurance policies. It also has an exclusion for personal injury protection benefit disputes in cases that are submitted to arbitration under the no-fault law. And lastly, there's a right to cure requirement, which is included, which has to be complied with before an action is commenced. All of these modifications are attempting to narrow the focus and deal with the real issues that a consumer may be facing. We have modified several of the definitions, working with a number of insurance companies in a way that they believe is clear. They've been vetted. They've been worked out with a number of entities. Now, I got to tell you, the goal here wasn't to get consensus. The goal was to get something that most could live with, and I think that we have gotten pretty close to that goal. But, Mr. Chair, I also happen to have an author's amendment. I believe that the A11. Mr. Chair.
Secretary will report the A11 Clark amendment.
Senator Clark moves to amend Senate File 2822 as follows, page 1, line 17. This is Amendment A11.
Senator Clark on the amendment.
Yes, this is
Important legislation, so let's listen to Senator Clark. Senator Clark.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This amendment does a couple of additional things. One of the issues that's been out there is, what do we actually call this? For me, the reason why you call it good faith is we have an expectation of good faith, and there's a remedy when an insurance company does not act in good faith. In other places, they call it bad faith because they're focusing specifically on the bad faith action. But along the way, one of the ideas that Senator Scheid had was at least renaming this in something that I think is much more neutral. And so I'd like to incorporate it into this. So it deletes the title, which is trying to reinforce that this is first party, and that's really what the goal is. But it would go ahead and replace the title with insurance standard of conduct, because that's what we're really talking about, is that we do expect insurers will act in good faith and that there will be a remedy if that is broken. The second thing is, it was our intent to also exclude dental coverage, but that inadvertently was left off in a previous version. And then the third thing that this does is that it incorporates a concept that we've heard often about, kind of the two lawsuit issue. This would make it so there aren't two lawsuits, but instead that we would have procedural requirements that would have to be followed to seek the recovery of the remedies. The insured could not seek remedies in the initial complaint and would have to bring a motion to amend the pleadings to do so. An award of the remedies would be determined in a proceeding subsequent to any determination as to whether the insured was entitled to proceeds under the insurance policy. This, again, is something that, at least a concept that Senator Scheid's been working on. She may have some additional things she might want to do with this. But what this is basically based on is something that we have in current law that's based on the punitive damages statute. There would be a parallel motion, and it would basically hope to weed out frivolous claims. So, Mr. Chair, I move the A11.
Discussion on the A11 Clark Amendment. Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed, motion prevails. Senator Clark.
Mr. Chair, that would be the end of my description. I'd urge your support of this bill. It's a balanced approach at this point, and it can help us move forward to protect consumers but also limit the focus on the insurance companies.
Discussion on the bill. Senator Scheid.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And members, you know, this is the so-called good faith or bad faith bill. I guess we've come to know it and love it by both of those phrases. It has to do with the ability of the insured, which is generally the policyholder, or a person who qualifies as an insured under the terms of an insurance policy. It has to do with their ability to make a claim that their insurer did not act in good faith in dealing with handling of their claim. We currently do have, in Minnesota statute, the Unfair Claims Settlement Practices Act. But I understand, and there are heavy penalties assigned or assessed to insurers who do not engage in fair claims settlement practices. But you know, it doesn't have the ability of the insured, the policyholder, if you will, to collect against that. So, as one of the penalties under that act. So, after much debate, as you know, it's been going on for over a year, and many permutations of the language, I have an amendment to offer, and I want to preface this amendment, and frankly, Senator Clark and I haven't had a lot of time to discuss this piece. I had an amendment drafted that was to delete everything, which I don't like coming out on the floor with, either as a chief author of my bill or in opposition or as an alternative to someone else's bill on the floor. And so we had the amendment drafted to the bill, incorporating that language that we kept in Senator Clark's bill. But Senator Clark, now with your amendment, it becomes more difficult to discuss what my amendment would try to do. So I'm going to ask that members look at the A9 amendment, because that will make the bill, this is what the bill will look like when I'm through. Senator Clark, it makes more sense, because I frankly did not learn of your amendment until I walked on the floor, and I can't really at this time ask staff to redraft my amendment to make it pertain to your bill. But let it be said that the amendment I'm offering goes a long way toward accepting the basics of what Senator Clark has. And so, Mr. Chairman, I would offer the A9 amendment.
Secretary, you will report the Scheid A9 amendment.
Senator Scheid moves to amend Senate File 2822 as follows: delete everything after the enacting clause and insert Section 1. This is Amendment A-9.
Okay, discussion on the amendment.
Mr. Chairman, I want to say to you that Senator Clark's bill came out of the Commerce Committee without recommendation. And a bill that I had offered was passed out of the Commerce Committee with recommendation. They both went to the Judiciary Committee, and that committee saw fit to send Senator Clark's bill out to the floor, but not the bill that I had authored, which I was offering as an alternative. Many members have said, please give us an alternative that's somewhere between what Senator Clark was trying to do or is trying to do and what the industry and people who are concerned about the cost of premiums care about. So, I'm offering this amendment to her bill. And it represents, I think, a true compromise. It offers the new cause of action with a remedy that includes attorney fees, and it's a significant penalty against the insurance company who fails to act with good faith toward their insured. Since we're breaking ground, new ground in Minnesota, as we've been reminded by Senator Clark and those who are proponents of the legislation, we are the only one of the 50 states that does not have either common law or statute regarding bad faith. We're going to break this new ground. Let's do it cautiously. And the amendment that I'm offering does just that. Let me describe what it does. First, and very importantly, it leaves the standard for showing a lack of good faith as is currently included in Senator Clark's bill. You often hear the proponents talking about the Wisconsin law. The Wisconsin law, members, is common law. It's not a statute. But we would be incorporating in our statute what is common law in Wisconsin. Some other states have done that. And I want to make sure that we have the language, as Senator Clark has, that accurately describes what the standard is for making this claim. So I have adopted in this amendment what Senator Clark has in her bill regarding that standard. So an insured, policyholder would have to show there is an absence of a reasonable basis for denying the benefits of the insurance policy, and they'd have to show that the insurer knew that there was no reasonable basis, or they acted in reckless disregard. That is the Anderson, so-called Anderson standard. It is Wisconsin law, and I want it to be included. So it stays. It's part of my amendment. Secondly, it excludes the same insurance companies, as does Senator Clark, except I think she just had an amendment that included dental plans. I want to say that I don't, in my amendment, try to carve out the mutual companies, because we've learned, and I think Senator Clark would agree, it's become virtually impossible to cut them out. So the one thing that both of these permutations will of this concept will do is to exclude health plans. Ironically, across the country, bad faith claims on health plans, on medical insurance, are the ones that are climbing. That is where many of the high profile claims are made. But we've excluded them. My amendment excludes them. Senator Clark's bill excludes health carriers. And the reason is very simple. We know this language will cause insurance premiums to rise. So we took health carriers out because we can't afford to let that happen to health insurance premiums. So they're out of the bill. I'm not suggesting they should be in. I'm just telling you why they're out. And that should give you pause, because what we have left, frankly, at the end of the day with this bill, is auto insurance and homeowners, property casualty. What are the two types of insurance that everybody in this room has to have? Your homeowner's insurance and your auto. Those are the two insurances that will be affected and impacted by this bill. And certainly premiums will rise. So I want to tell you a little more what benefit there is for the consumer in the amendment I have. I'm going to give you an example. There's language in here having to do with benefits up to half or whichever is less. You don't have to look at that if you don't want to. I think members, if you wanted to fully understand every word in this bill, you probably should go to law school, and I don't want to take you there. I have a feeling a lot of you would not willingly go. But if the insurer, for example, offers the policyholder $50,000 to settle a claim, and they go to court, and the court says, you know what, policyholder, we find you're entitled to $250,000, a difference of $200,000. Under Senator Clark's bill, they would probably get the $250,000. Under my amendment, that policyholder would get the $250,000 awarded by the court, and up to half of the difference, up to another $100,000. So they would get $350,000. And they would get attorney's fees up to $40,000. And what this does, members, you're going to say, well, there could still be an increase in premiums. Yes, but members, it's quantifiable. The insurance company knows the risk going in. They know that the award is capped at the $140,000, if you will. That's why I think what I have is superior, because it benefits the consumer. And we say we want to do that. And I look at it as if we are all consumers and all of our constituents are insurance consumers. And I want to balance the needs of those people who are treated poorly or in bad faith or not in good faith by their insurance company along with the interests of all of us who pay the premiums for these two types of insurance. So I'm asking you to support this amendment. It sets out a structure. It benefits the consumer. They get an additional penalty. They get attorney's fees up to $40,000. But there is a cap. And this is dealing with an insurer's lack of good faith when they're awarding the benefits. Remember, I'm adopting the same standard, the same point of entry, if you will, for filing a claim. You have to show this. The very same language appears in my amendment as does in Senator Clark's regarding the standard. I'd ask your support on the A-9 amendment.
Senator Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. 49 other states already have a remedy for those who are treated in bad faith by their own insurance company. And over the last several years, and especially since last year, Senator Clark has worked diligently with the insurance industry to find a bill that balances the rights of consumers with the rights of the insurance industry so that we can join all other 49 states in providing some type of relief for that injured person who at their most vulnerable time is in some circumstances taken advantage of by individual people within the insurance industry. And there isn't a group to speak on behalf of these people's interests. This bill is often couched as something between the insurance companies and attorneys. But it isn't because of attorneys that we're bringing this legislation forward. It's because of those injured people who are dealing with insurance companies at the time when they're the most vulnerable. And let me give you an example of how this happens. You're in a car and you're on your way home from work, and all of a sudden, from out of the blue, a drunk driver drives through a stoplight, hits your car, and now you're going to spend the rest of your life in a wheelchair. Under those circumstances, if that other driver has insurance, and let's just say you have $1 million worth of damages plus, no one could argue about the fact that you won't be able to work again and you're going to be paying exorbitant medical bills for the rest of your life. In those circumstances, it's clear that they owe you much more than the policy limits for the driver of that other car. Those are what are called third-party claims, and in those situations, we have a remedy already under the law to give that person some latitude and some leverage in dealing with the insurance company. But now let's say that that person doesn't have, the person who caused the accident, that drunk driver, doesn't have insurance, and you have to deal with your own insurance company and file a claim against your uninsured coverage. That's one of the situations. That first-party situation is what we're dealing with in this law. And you know what happens far too often in those situations? Even when there's no argument about who was at fault, even when your damages clearly exceed your policy limits by 10 times, too often you hear from that insurance adjuster, "Well, the worst that could possibly happen is we have to pay you the policy limits. Let's just say they're $100,000, and you're going to have to go hire an attorney to make us pay you that amount. So that's going to cost you a third of your claim. So why should we pay you that $100,000? The most you're going to get is $66,000 under any circumstances. Why should we pay you that $100,000? We're going to take a 25% discount. We'll give you $75,000, and you still come out ahead." That kind of thing happens frequently in our state, and that's what happens when you don't have a remedy and you don't have some balancing of the leverage between the individual person and the insurance company. What happens with the legislation that Senator Clark has proposed is that when the insurance company does that, they get a 60-day notice. You have to tell them, "Insurance company, you're acting in bad faith. You're not paying me when you have no reasonable basis for not doing so." And they get a chance to cure that. So they get a chance to make things right. But if they refuse to do that after 60 days, and if going forward you can prove that they had no reasonable basis for denying that claim, and as a result you had to pay an attorney, then then that's going to become their responsibility to pay, not that person who was injured, because they never should have had to pay those attorney's fees in the first place. That's what Senator Clark's bill does. The attorneys get paid either way. This is a bill for consumers that in those circumstances gives them some justice under our legal system, just like the other 49 states have in place. With all due respect, I've looked at Senator Scheid's bill, and we looked at it in judiciary, and as she said, you almost have to go to law school to understand some of the nuances of the differences between these bills. But much of what is in Senator Scheid's bill today was already debated in judiciary, and the concern is that this does not adopt a standard that's in place in any of the 50 states today, or other 49 states. It goes so much farther. It takes a standard that's in Senator Clark's bill and then adds some additional conditions that give the insurance companies so many loopholes that that injured person, that person who got hit by a drunk driver, would in essence, as a practical matter, really still have no recourse. And so I urge you to support Senator Clark's bill. It's been vetted with the insurance industry. You'll see that there's a letter here that a large percentage of them are taking a neutral position, and it's a good balance. Thank you.
Senator Scheid.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. I just want members to hear one really important fact. Senator Olson said that all the other states do what Senator Clark is trying to do. No, they don't. Not all states pay attorney's fees. They all may have some sort of bad faith action, but they do not all pay attorney's fees. In the United States, we follow what's called the American rule. And that is that unless it specifically says in a statute that there is an award of attorney's fees, the plaintiff pays their own attorney's fees. That's across the board, except you know that we have some statutes that award attorney's fees. And members, the amendment I'm offering does award attorney's fees. But it includes an extra benefit for the consumer, up to half the difference, or $100,000, that would be the cap, of an award by a court. So I would urge you to support my A9 amendment.
Mr. President.
Senator Hamm.
Thank you, Mr. President. I'm wondering, could I ask a question of one of the authors, Senator Clark or Senator Olson?
Yes, you may, I guess. Senator Hamm. Yep.
Thank you, Mr. President. And I in the discussion here, it seems that it's likely that if we do this, if we adopt, Senator Clark, your bill, that for the ordinary consumer, the most of us who are buying insurance and not necessarily suing our insurer, that our rates would go up. And I just wanted to know, what is the additional cost and rate increases that will occur as a result of adopting your bill?
Senator Olson, Senator Clark?
Mr. Chair, there have been nobody has actually come forward with anything, so I believe that this will not, because in here, under the current bill that's in front of you as opposed to the amendment, there is the ability of the judge to determine that no attorney's fees could be collected. The standard is very high. You have to both prove, again, that there is no reasonable basis, and then you have to show knowledge or reckless disregard. That is a pretty high standard. Then you only can be recovering under this for the action that relates to the violation of good faith. So it is very limited. It's not about the underlying action. And now with the amendment that we have incorporated already, it is not even a separate action. I actually am concerned, Mr. Chair, that this amendment in front of us by the A9 would actually increase litigation, increase attorneys' costs, and frankly encourage unintentionally, I do not believe it is the intent, I just think that there are some drafting issues here. There are some issues that in here that appear to me to encourage or at least take away the incentive for not acting in bad faith, because for example, in subdivision 2, B2, it basically says that you would not be entitled to an amount in excess of what has been offered by the insurer. So if they make you a 50% offer, you can't recover more. So it's frankly a little confusing that under this amendment what would happen, but again, that there are some insurers that chose not to come forward with ideas, but others have vetted the definitions, the standard, the discretionary language, that if you have arbitrated under no fault, we have gone through a number of things to actually limit the amount. I also have committed, Mr. Chair, that if we find after this has been passed that there is some unintended issue, that we will come back and work on this, because that would not be my intent to increase costs or, frankly, increase litigation.
Senator Scheid.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to ask for a roll call, please.
There will be a roll call.
And
three
then,
hands.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And then as a reminder, as I think we probably prepare to vote here on this amendment, to ask members to consider that I believe we have drafted this amendment carefully so that we are going ahead carefully and people will be entitled to the penalty and they will have attorney's fees paid up to $40,000. That's important to understand. We'll have that, but we're not just going to throw open the door and try to come back and close that door later on. I say let's go cautiously. Thank you.
Further discussion on the A9 amendment. Senator Chaudhry.
Thank you, Mr. President. Just one concern that I'd like to raise with the amendment, and that is when we're talking about exempting insurance companies from the bad faith requirement, if they relied on the advice of counsel to provide that bad faith advice or action. First of all, I'm a little skeptical as to why it's okay for an insurance company to act in bad faith if that was legal advice that they've gotten. That seems to me to make no difference in the fact that bad faith was conducted. Secondly, when we're just talking about relying on the advice of counsel, I'm concerned that, with any claim of bad faith, an insurer could simply say, well, I was just relying on the advice of my counsel, and then the insured person would say, well, how do I know that? What advice did that counsel give you? And they'll say, well, that's privileged. That's privileged information. And so what that ends up having to do is basically create a kind of a circular roadblock where you're saying, well, the lawyer advises someone to act in bad faith, then that person is allowed to act in bad faith. But then if you want to know what the lawyer actually advised them to do, you wouldn't be allowed to allowed information to that. Then the last point is that all insurers have lawyers, and so and presumably all of their conduct is within the law, and so when we say you act in bad faith, it's okay to act in bad faith as long as the lawyer tells you it's okay. That just doesn't seem to make sense to me, and moreover, it kind of creates this big exception that you can drive a truck through in the whole bill. So that's a one point of concern that I would raise.
Senator Latz, did you? We're on the, we're discussing the A9 amendment. Right, Warren? Senator Latz.
Thank you. I have a question and for Senator Scheid about the amendment. A little clarification perhaps would be helpful. On line 1.9 in the definition of insured, it says that insured does not include any person or entity claiming a third-party beneficiary status under the insurance policy. And then under on line 1.15, it defines insurance policy as a written agreement between an insured and an insurer, which obligates an insurer to pay proceeds directly to the insured. My concern is what impact this would have on any claims that are made by either children or spouses of the named insured, whether they would be able to maintain a claim under these provisions.
Senator Scheid.
Mr. Chairman, I believe I can tell you what I believe our language means on lines 1.6 to 1.10. And I think it doesn't have the ambiguity that I would suggest you would find in the original or in the 2822 as it stands before us. Because proponents have said they want to limit this cause of action to first-party claims. So if you qualify as an insured on the policy, which may include family members, then you would be they would be covered and would be able to pursue that, you know, an action under this statute. So but it is not to open up for third party claims. I believe that that right exists. So I don't think that that's a problem. Mr. Chairman, I'd like to offer an amendment on page 2 of the A9 amendment.
This is a verbal amendment? Yeah, that
Mr. Chairman, it is. It would strike language.
State your amendment to the
on
amendment.
Line 2.2, strike the comma to the end of the line and strike all of line 23 except the period. So it will say a disagreement between an insurer and an insured as to the value or amount of proceeds owed to an insured or an arson investigation or a fraud investigation, period. It addresses Senator Chaudhry's concern, and I agree with him.
I will report the amendment to the amendment.
Senator Scheid moves to amend her amendment to Senate File 2822 as follows. On page 2, line 2, delete the second comma and everything in the rest of the line, and delete line 2.3.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Scheid.
Mr. Chairman, I apologize. This points out the reason of not doing this on the fly, but I think he has a valid concern. On line 2.3, we need to leave does not violate this section. So we're really on line 2.2 striking comma or an insurer's, and on line 2.3, reliance on the advice of counsel.
And leave in does not violate this section.
Mr. Yes. Chairman, thank you, and members, okay. Thank you.
Okay, we're on the amendment to the amendment. Discussion on that. Seeing none, all those in favor of the amendment to the amendment, signify by saying aye. Opposed. Motion prevails. Discussion on the A9 amendment as amended. Senator Ortman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. There is a very real, significant, remarkable difference between Senator Scheid's amendment and Senator Clark's bill. And I'm hoping that the members will support Senator Scheid's amendment and not the Clark version. The reason why was pointed out extremely well by Senator Olson. In her case, she talked about an automobile accident where the insured goes to his insured company and asks for the policy limits of $100,000. In Senator Scheid's bill, there would be a settlement incentive for all parties involved. In Senator Clark's bill, there would be a disincentive to settlement. The insured person can only recover $100,000 under either bill, but a lawyer can win the lottery under Senator Clark's bill because there's no limit to the amount of attorney's fees that the attorney, the enterprising attorney, can claim under Senator Clark's bill. But under Senator Scheid's very reasonable version, the attorney is not the lottery winner here. We make sure under Senator Scheid's bill or version that the lawyers can only cover a reasonable amount related to the actual recovery, a limit of $40,000. We need that limit. Otherwise, the lawyers have a disincentive and operate in a disincentive to settlement and say, well, we'll just take our chances and go to court. And maybe the court will give us a chance. But that creates the disincentive to settlement. And lawyers are now playing the lottery looking for recoveries. I hope members will realize we don't want that in Minnesota. Sure, we may want to make sure that the insured gets full value. And we may want to create a situation where the insurance companies are cautious when they deny these benefits. But we don't want to create a disincentive to settlement. I hope members will vote for the Scheid Amendment.
Okay, we're on the 8-9 amendment. Any further discussion? Secretary, Senator Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And in response to Senator Ortman's statement, as I said before, I mean, it's hard to talk about the details of these bills unless you're really going through them as we did in committee and comparing them. But to say that there's a better deal for attorneys in one bill versus the other is just not an accurate statement of these bills. In the first Senator Scheid's amendment is essentially the bill that was presented to the Judiciary Committee and the bill that did not pass through that committee, where a number of people, most of whom are lawyers, compared these remedies and looked at what they thought would be best for the consumer. The one thing about Senator Scheid's bill is it's very difficult to measure what the damages would be unless you actually go to trial. That's why Senator Clark said that more cases will be forced to trial through Senator Scheid's bill. On the other hand, with Senator Clark's approach, it's very easy from the very outset to determine what some of those additional costs may be, and it's going to make it more likely, not less likely, that cases will settle early on under Senator Clark's approach. Thank you.
Senator Clark.
Mr. Chair, I just rise to oppose the amendment. Not the intent, though, obviously, of the author. I think that we've all been trying to work and move forward in a way that really does balance things. But just very quickly, and I know that we will then be voting on the amendment, the definitional terms at this point appear to lack clarity. We had worked with a number of insurers to try to have agreement in the ones that are in the bill or that is before the body. There are questions about whether or not it undoes other case law, how it impacts other case law, and at the end of the day, while I tried to figure out how we could incorporate it into the bill that's before you, it raised more questions, and that's why I did not do that. The second piece under the liability, while it has the Anderson standard in it, it goes a lot further. To me, it lacks some clarity about what they're really trying to do. But again, under subdivision 2B2, it appears that it really undoes the whole point of moving forward because the insurer would be limited on the face of it by what the offer had been, thus perhaps giving an incentive to go with lower agreements. I appreciate that Senator Scheid did the amendment to it. I think that helps give a bit of clarity. But under the remedies section, we really don't have anything in law that looks like this right now. Judges, their job is to exercise their discretion, utilize their judgment about what's in front of them. It is discretionary. There is a number of factors that have to be taken into account. It is a cleaner, and again, we had worked on this with a number of insurers. And then lastly, under Subdivision 4, the claim for taxable costs, the amendment that we've already incorporates sections or Subdivision 4A and B, which I do believe actually helps quite a bit. We've already incorporated that piece. But the additional components, C, it appears that every case, that although under current law, that every case in Minnesota is subject to alternative dispute resolution. I think that that must be a mistake. I think they must have been trying to go ahead and make an exemption for this here because it doesn't make sense. And then the remainder of those pieces, it was just unclear where it was really trying to go. So the substance of what I believe Senator Shad was trying to do is a very good piece, and we have already incorporated it into the bill as it exists. So again, I oppose this amendment.
We're on the Shad A9 amendment. Further discussion? Seeing none, the Secretary will take the roll on the Shad amendment. All senators having voted. Desire to vote. Secretary will close the roll. There being 37 ayes and 30 nays, the amendment is adopted. Further discussion on the bill as amended. All those in favor of Senate File 2822 as amended, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Motion prevails. Senator Pogemiller.
Mr. Chairman, I move the committee do now arise and report.
On the motion, all those in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. Senator Pogemiller.
Mr. President, I move the report of the Committee of the Whole as kept by the Secretary be now adopted.
On the motion, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed. Motion prevails.
Mr. President?
Senator Pogemiller.
Is there an addendum yet or not?
No.
Okay, so members, we're going to recess to the call of the chair to accept committee reports later in the day sometime. Is there any other work at the desk?
Yeah, before that, we've got a couple of motions to do up here at the desk. Remaining under motions, Senator
Koch moved that the name of Senator Ress be added as a co-author to Senate file number 3055.
On that motion, all those in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed, motion prevails. Another motion to be read at the desk. Do you have it there? Senator Koch.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would like to move that Senate File 3055, number 62 on general orders, be stricken and re-referred to the Committee on State and Local Government Operations and Oversight.
This is your bill, Senator
Koch. This is my bill.
Okay, any discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed, motion prevails. One more motion, Senator Dahl.
Thank you, Mr. President. I move that Senate File 2934 be withdrawn from the Committee on Health, Housing, and Family Security and re-referred to the Committee on Finance. I've talked to both of the chairs, and they approve.
Okay, this is your bill. All
yes,
in favor, signify by saying aye. Opposed, motion prevails. Yes, we have one more.
Senator Day moved that his name be stricken as a co-author to Senate File 3717.
On the Day motion, all those in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed, motion prevails. I believe we're probably any announcements of Senate interest? Senator Pogemiller, at recess, or
Mr. President, members, we will recess to the call of the chair to take committee reports later this afternoon sometime, so just need a skeleton crew. Tomorrow, the plan is to come in at 10:30 tomorrow, and then we will recess at 10:30 and allow for caucuses to meet. And then hopefully get back to order about 11:15 or so. And we will take up, I believe Senator Berglund's bill was processed by the Finance Committee today, Senator Berglund and Rosen's bill. I forget the number, but it's the health care reform bill. What's the number? 3099. And so the intent would be to take up 3099 on the floor tomorrow. And we have committee meetings in the afternoon, so if we're not able to process that by about 12:30, we will recess and then come back later in the evening, I suppose, early evening, to finish the bill. So I would then move, Mr. President, to recess to the call of the chair.
Before that, apparently there's one more motion to be read at the desk.
I'd withdraw my motion.
Senator Dahl moves that Senate File 3775 be withdrawn from the Committee on Environment and Natural Resources and re-referred to the Committee on Judiciary.
On it. That's your bill. Okay. And you talk to the chairs. And on the motion by Senator Dahl, all those in agreement signify by saying aye. Opposed, motion prevails. Now, Senator Pogemiller.
So again, just a skeleton crew later today, and we'll see you at 10:30 in the morning. Mr. President, I move the recess to call the chair.
On the motion to recess to the call of the chair, all those in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed. Motion prevails. The Senate stands at recess.
Madam President.
Senator will be in order.
Madam President, on motions and resolutions, I think we have reports of committees on the addendum. I would move adoption of the reports of the committees as printed in the addendum.
On that motion, all those in favor say aye. Opposed? The motion prevails. Senator Pogemiller.
Is there any other work at the desk?
Second readings of Senate bills. And as they are printed in the addendum. Do I need to name? Second reading.
There's a second reading of
House. Second reading of House files. Do I need the numbers? As printed in the addendum. Second reading. There's no further business at the desk.
Any excusals or announcements?
No one is excused for
today. Okay, then, Madam
today.
President, I'd move that the Senate adjourn to Wednesday, March 19th, 10:30 a.m.
Senator Progemiller moves that the Senate do now adjourn until Wednesday, March 19th at 10:30 a.m. All in favor of that motion, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. The Senate is adjourned until Wednesday, March 19th at 10:30 a.m.